When, Cress, was the last time that you played with some Lego?
Oh, I mean, I'm not really... I don't know if I ever properly played with Lego, I'll be honest.
Well...
What about you?
I was about to say, what do you mean? I don't think I did either.
Okay.
I tried Lego, but I found it a bit too fiddly, so instead
right.
I was a Duplo guy.
So
I was the big Duplo guy.
So you're quite lame then. Duplo's a bit lame. Duplo's a bit lame, isn't it?
Lame.
It's a bit
boring.
Why
did you suddenly come out with lame when it comes to Duplo?
Compared to Lego, it's not as cool, is it?
No, yeah, all right. Fair enough. It's not got the cult following. I'll give you that. Look, there's a reason we're talking about Lego. Don't get angry. There's a reason we're talking about Lego. All will be revealed in this episode of Nullpoix.
Nullpoix is shameful.
Nullpoix is lack of respect for jurors.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Nullpoint is no fun.
It is Nullpoix. I am Laura, that's Martin. We are here to talk all things Eurovision, but also the different facets of the competition, because yes, we know the competition is finished, but that doesn't mean there's nothing to talk about. As you'll find, we've got a very exciting guest coming up in this episode. You might have seen doing the rounds all over Twitter and social media, the new film from Lego Eurovision. This is a YouTube channel that perfectly recreates each competition and Junior Eurovision as well in Lego. They create the entire stage. They create all the contestants, of course. It's brilliant. If you have seen it, you'd be very excited to know. We are going to be speaking to Alexandro Kruger. He is the guy behind Lego Eurovision. We're going to be finding out how long it takes him to make all of these things. I'm really interested to know.
It is so impressive, isn't it? If
yeah,
you've not seen it before, do go and look it up on, well, anywhere really. Look it up on YouTube is where
YouTube,
you'll find the full
yeah.
thing. And it really is a shot for shot Lego interpretation of every single Eurovision Song Contest.
It's so good.
It is really, really good. Anyway, that's to come a little bit later. First, we talk science.
All right, then. Yes, this is the news. We've got some news in, and it is quite interesting, this, actually, despite Martin using that kind of little voice to describe it. We've got results, basically, back about how many people tested positive for COVID, and this is during the actual proper events of Eurovision, because if you remember, this was a part of a sort of event that was going ahead as part of the Dutch government. They were allowing it. The body that was helping this go ahead, the entire Eurovision Song Contest of 2021 Field Lab events, they were overseeing what they were calling sort of test events. So we had the nine Eurovision shows, obviously the final, and the other eight, such as the jury shows, the semi-finals. And they were all allowed to go ahead because of these test events by Field Lab events. And what that meant was that people had to test beforehand to see if they had COVID. Afterwards, obviously, they could only attend the events if they were negative. And now we have the results back about of the visitors who attended the song competition. And what does it say, Martin?
Well, it says that of the, 30,000 odd people who over those, I think it was nine events.
Yeah, that's right.
Attended the Eurovision site and took part in this test event. Of those 30,000 spectators, 48 were positive when the tests were done sort of after the event. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, I think it's important to make this clear, doesn't necessarily mean that they picked COVID up whilst they were at the Eurovision. They might have done.
No.
But they could have got it at the supermarket the next day alongside a nice bottle of pop.
Or a bottle of wine, yes.
A lovely little bottle of wine. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, but 48 out of 30,000 is what the official records will show.
Yeah.
For following that event, the people who attended, 48 of them went on to test positive. And I'm trying to work out if that's a big number or a small number.
Yeah, and I think it's a good question to raise. I think we have to sort of think about it in the context. Yes, you've said that it's out of 30,000. Also, the Dutch media have said the 48 new cases represent an average of 1.6 per thousand or over 5 per show. That's a lower infection rate compared to the national average at the time. So actually, a pretty decent turnout, really. I think the thing is not to have been expecting there to be no cases from the event, because as you say, it sounds like it wasn't just coming from the event itself. People were testing afterwards as well. And so there's a bit of discrepancy there. And so I think really that's possibly, this is probably the best result they could have hoped for in this kind of thing. Obviously, it'd be great for it to have said no spectators contracted COVID. But I think the point was, is that, you know, there was always going to be a little bit of discrepancy, and that's what's happened.
Really, really interesting stuff. And I've got all my fingers crossed, all 12 of them, that because I've got one finger for every point available at Eurovision, you
right.
see.
Right. Oh, gosh.
I know. We didn't know that. See, like my thumb, I feel, counts as two fingers.
It doesn't,
so
though.
That's how it's I not, count though. It, though, to be, like, Eurovision compliant. Anyway.
Sorry. What? What? I just... Sorry, I just...
No, look. It goes.
Yeah.
Little pinky.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yeah.
Little next one. So I've got four so far. Then you get to my thumb.
Yeah.
5, 6. Then on the other hand.
Okay.
7, little pinky.
Yeah. Now
eight,
we don't need to go through.
Nine,
the hand
ten,
is the same.
And then my thumb.
Yes.
11, 12.
Yes. You don't need to do it again for the second hand because it's obviously going to be the same as the first, isn't it? You don't need to go. And then for the next one. 1, 2, 3. Yes. We
so
get
I've
it.
So got 12. Fingers.
You don't, though, do you? Right. Is that what you put on your Tinder profile?
Why is that where you went with it?
Just oh God, I'm gonna die. By the way, I've got a bit of a cough, folks. So if Marta keeps making me laugh,
not COVID related.
It's not COVID related.
It?
It's all negative. No. Don't worry. But Marta, you must stop making me laugh and get that off your Tinder profile, please.
Okay, will do.
Right, now let's get into it. Let's chat to Alexandro Kruger. He is, of course, the creative behind LEGO Eurovision. Hi, Alexandro.
Hello. Good day.
Good day. Tell us a bit then, what is LEGO Eurovision? We've been talking about it a little bit. It's basically a YouTube channel, isn't it, which faithfully recreates the entire Eurovision show in LEGO. That's right, isn't it?
It's right. For most people or Eurovision fans, it's, you know, one time a year they see the adult Eurovision recreated with Legos. And actually behind me, you don't see that at the moment, I have the model that is a huge blue and green screen. So that's what it is for most people. But for me, it's my, I would say, hobby, where I recreate everything from the Eurovision, Junior Eurovision, the Eurovision movie in stop motion Legos. You know, all the fun parts, all the not so fun parts, like 0 points for everyone this year.
Yeah.
And so that's it.
It's so well done and brilliantly created. I mean, it must have taken you forever. How long does it take to put together something like that? Because the attention to detail is just exquisite.
I have to tell, I mean, it's a long story, but I mean, this, for example, this model has been with me for 2 years. And I have been working on details. It's 100% recreation of the stage.
Wow.
I have the original plans, of course, that I receive each year from the stage designers. It's 100% everything, every stair, every light. And I work on every detail until the very end, like 30 minutes before I actually did the first, you know, segment. I changed some quite big stuff on the stage set. But, I mean, in the end, people care more about, you know, broken glass or something in the video.
Of course, yes. We'll get to that as well, because that's a great moment in the video. It's brilliant. That's great because, obviously, you can recreate bits that, you know, we didn't actually get to see as well. But roughly how many Lego bricks, then, are going into these finished videos?
In this model and in this project, around 500,000.
Whoa!
I have to tell you that I have also built, you know, another studio, totally blue screen and green screen, where I did like the Icelandic, you know, they sat at a hotel. I recreate some of the past winners. So 500,000 about.
Wow.
That is just incredible. It's also bonkers. It's also mad, but in the most amazing way. The question has to be, Alexandro, why? Yes. Why do you do this?
Yeah, I ask myself the same question. I don't know. No, but it all started when I had been doing this for 17 years, so since I was about one. I always have had this urge to create, and when I was younger, I wasn't able to, you know, go to Eurovision, work with Eurovision, so I recreated it at my very home. But it's also been, I mean, many people think that this is a fascination about Legos. Sorry to say that it's not. It's just a way of expressing, because it's a very cheap, it's not cheap, I can tell you that, but it's a cheaper version to have the same to work with, because I can't recreate Eurovision with a stage. I don't have that budget yet.
If you haven't yet had a chance to watch the video, by the way, please, please do. It's so worth it. The shots in it are amazing, and you really are very faithful to recreating the different shots in the various different scenes. You've got those full stadium shots, and you can see all of the little Lego participants in their little booths in the green room. You can see everybody on stage. The presenters come out. There's the green screen behind. It's so, so well done. But what was your personal favourite scene to recreate from Eurovision this year?
I am actually quite happy with the Ukrainian entry. I think that was, I like the song, I liked how Cyprus turned out, but of course I will try to make them even better for the semi-finals.
Let's talk about, well, we should quickly mention the broken glass scene. Tell us about recreating that.
Yes, as we all know, it was a bit of a, what's it, drama, a dramatic moment during the grand final.
Yeah, quite the controversy.
Where people claimed that something not so good was done by one of the Italian singers. But I had more cameras during my grand final and actually captured what actually happened. And a glass broke, nothing else. And he tried to look on the floor and, you know, nothing else. I'm not going to repeat the accusations no. Because since I've worked with Eurovision, I know the amount of safety. It would be impossible for something like that to happen almost. I mean, they have dogs sniffing everywhere. No one sniffed anything. It was just a glass. So that happened. And I used my extra camera to show that.
It's great.
Just fantastic. I love the sense of humour behind it all. What sort of reaction do you get from people who view this and probably now make it a bit of a tradition to view this every year?
It's fun, like how it's, I mean, it's the most watched Eurovision content online at the moment.
Wow.
Brag, sorry.
You've earned it.
But it's so strange each and every year because this is, I'm a very boring person. I mean, I live a very boring life. And then this happens. The reactions are very positive. Some people are very political, of course. Some people call me in the middle of the night with death threats. It's a few.
Sorry, Alexandra. Yeah. You've received death threats because you've made a Lego version of the Eurovision Song Contest.
What?
Yeah, each and every year that happens. And sometimes you have to call, you know, the authorities to like that. This happened because they know my address and everything. And
What? Can you understand why people would do that?
They claim that it's politics. And when I'm in like a television show or something that I'm doing a little now and then, and when there are bigger television shows, I don't try to hide the fact that I'm gay. And, you know, many people are not that positive about that and want me to die and everything. But I think that's just hilarious because if they live like very, very far away, and have like maybe are gay themselves and don't want to admit it, but because or just have a problem with it. But of course, sometimes you get scared when they call in the middle of the night and like you live there and you know, because you don't know what people can do. But let's not give that too much attention. But I just did. But that happens and that's a part of it. But most, like 99.9% is positive. It's just a fun thing to tell about because people don't. And I never thought that kind of reaction or whatever you call it would come from doing this. But you know, also, you know, the political side is very hard. I'm not going to name any countries because I don't want to. This is not, some people can take it as, you know, oh, you didn't like that or you did that, use that symbol in that for that nation. I'm not a political person myself. This is just pure fun. And of course, big bunch of humor is in it. because it's Eurovision.
And that is what's so wonderful about it, isn't it? That being able to sort of laugh along with Eurovision and enjoy the fun that comes with the competition every single year.
Yeah, the crashes of cultures, yeah.
Mm. Well, why did you pick the Eurovision? What is it about the Eurovision Song Contest for you that made you love it so much that you wanted to kind of celebrate it in this way?
I like a big show, and there isn't a bigger show. It's a spectacle. You have different nations, different languages. So it's that aspect that is quite fun. It's just because if you have a talent show in like Sweden or Germany, it's always sort of the similar kind of music, kind of, even though it's in different languages and different, but it's not this cultural phenomenon. I've traveled a lot in Europe, so I'm quite fascinated with how different Europe is, you know, also the cultures. And of course, I mean, it has a huge audience. It's a treat to celebrate looking back at past years, because the show is like, we know that it's like 4 million hours. And it's also a way of telling that you can tell the same story in a much shorter time, because they really can. Not to be mean, but we don't need 4 hours.
No.
It's a really good point.
No, I think we all agree with that, to be fair.
I mean, it's the best show ever, so I don't hate it anyway. But Last Hour could really be, I mean, especially in these times where television needs to be shorter and, you know, faster.
Well, that's why your Lego version is great, because it's always under, you know, half an hour or roughly around that. So it's brilliant that you managed to condense it all into that.
Yeah, and it's and you get sort of the same memories with you, but of course it's way faster. They maybe could cut down the interval act, sorry.
Yeah, well, I'm going to write all this down and I'm going to suggest it to the EBU for next year. Speaking of next year, we can't let you go before sort of asking you, any surprises do you think that you might want to be trying to include for next year to make it bigger and better than before?
It all depends on what the Italians bring, you know, the stage design. I have my idea. You can do everything for Eurovision, and I expect that from Italy. But I hope for a big smashing stage, what I will redo.
Well, thank you so much, Alexandro, for chatting to us. And just tell us, for people who want to watch this video, tell us all about your socials and where people can see it.
If you want to hook up with this, you should Google Lego Eurovision or YouTube or Instagram. It's the first thing you find. And feel free to hashtag anyway and share what you think.
Oh, so good to hear from Alexandra, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much. Really, really great stuff. And if you do get a second, and I've mentioned this enough, but if you do get a second, please do go and look it up on YouTube. It is really, really worth looking at. Very, very good indeed. Cress, could you check your watch, please?
Yeah.
Just have a little look at the watch.
Yeah.
And could you ask me what I think the time on your watch says?
Right. Okay. I mean, I can, so, but I know what the time is. I can see it.
Could you ask me what the time is, please?
What's the time?
It's trivia time!
It's actually 4:15.
Don't worry about what the real time is. Now is trivia time, the bit of the podcast where I give you, or Cress gives you, a little bit of Eurovision trivia to help really extend your knowledge of the competition. Because Cress and I, we don't really know all there is to know about Eurovision. We are learning.
No, we don't.
And we're using these little facts as a way of educating each other, and hopefully you as well, as to how the Eurovision works in the crazy world. Now, this is quite a quick fact, okay? A little quick factoid for you. I want to take you back to possibly the Eurovision heyday, possibly the greatest year ever of Eurovision. Big debate, I'm sure there is on that. 1974. Why is that an important year? It's the year that ABBA won the singing competition with Waterloo.
Yeah, it did. Fantastic song.
But I thought this was particularly interesting when I started delving into some of the stats and statistics about it.
Oh.
Because you and I have been talking quite a lot about how the UK got Nul Poir quite spectacularly.
Yes.
But it was in 1974 that the UK gave Waterloo by ABBA nothing. Zilcho.
Yeah.
Nul pois.
Bad,
and
isn't
I
it?
Just find that amazing. Obviously, they didn't get nul pois because they won the blinking thing.
Yeah.
But the UK went, oh, no. One of the best songs ever made and ever to come out of the Eurovision Song Contest.
Thanks.
Nah, not for us.
Not for us.
And no, thank you.
It is interesting because Olivia Newton-John was the UK's entry that year. And I think she would have had a really good chance of winning it were it not for ABBA. But that is like saying, I think England have a great chance of winning the Euros were it not for France or something like that.
Although
France actually haven't done that well recently. But anyway, yeah, I mean, is it, I don't know. I'll add a little factoid onto that, Marta. Don't know if you know, obviously, that isn't the first time that ABBA tried to represent Sweden in Eurovision. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, actually. Please tell me more.
I will. Well, they did try and represent them before, the year before in 1973. They took part in Melody Festivalen, the members of ABBA who would later be known as ABBA. But they finished third with their own entry. They went in with a song called Ring Ring, but they did not get selected to represent Sweden.
Really?
It's a good thing they tried again.
Yeah, really is. Well, there you go. You learn something new every day, especially here on Nul pois, in that particular episode of Trivia Time!
Lovely stuff. Well done. Yes, that was Trivia Time. We've just got a little bit of time now to tell you how you can get in touch with us if you do want to. Let us know, do you like Lego? Do you like Duplo? Have
Duplo's
you seen...
Duplo's the way forward. How many fingers do you have? There's so many questions.
Look. I mean, you could tell us that if you want, I guess. Have you seen Alexandra's video? What did you make of it? All of that kind of stuff. We'd love to hear a bit more. Do get in touch with us. By the way, Marta, do you know that we have a YouTube channel?
Yes, I know we have a YouTube channel. Why do you ask me this every time you talk about the YouTube channel? I was there at the filming of the YouTube video. So I know that we've got a YouTube channel. I've seen the videos go up. I've seen the comments.
I just wanted to make sure you knew because, yes, we do have a YouTube channel and it is called Nul pois, talking about Nul pois and the UK previously there. We do have a YouTube channel and it's worth checking out because it's not just the podcast. It's where we go over the past entries that have scored Nul pois in the competition. We go back and we react to them. We decide if they deserved Nul pois. We've got three videos up there at the moment, but one that I'd like to draw your attention to is we've got a Gemini, and that's gone particularly well. I wonder why a video about UK getting Nul pois previously has done so well. Who knows? But yeah, we have had to... But thank you to everyone who's reacted to that. We had some great comments. A lot of people saying, yes, Gemini did deserve those Nul pois. I think that's what we said as well. But thank you very much to, I think it was Andy McNabb, who definitely agreed they deserved Nul pois, saying the cringe is horrific, poor people, awful, just awful. And I think that maybe sums our thoughts up as well, Andy. So thanks for getting in touch. You can too if you go to Nul pois on YouTube. We are also, of course, on Twitter, @poisnull. If you want to tweet us, we're also on Instagram, Nul pois Podcast. And of course, if you do want to send us an email about how much you prefer Lego to Duplo or how you've got 12 fingers, I guess, nulpoispodcast@gmail.com.
That's the way to do it. Thank you very, very much for your company over the last little while. Laura and I will be back again for another episode very soon of Nul pois! I thought the fact that I've got 12 fingers would be really interesting.
I mean, you don't have 12 fingers, though.
Debatable.
Yeah, it's not, though.